Well, hello and welcome to the Ziwani podcast, where we explore what it means for Christians to engage redemptively in business. I'm your host, Sid Sivanda. I'm joined today by a friend of mine, as it happens, Audrey Gatawa, a lady who has a distinguished career in the South African financial services industry and also a passion for financial literacy and independence on the continent. Hello, Audrey.
Hi, Sibs.
Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for your time. So, Audrey, as you heard me mention, Ziwani is really all about thinking about redemptive engagement, particularly in the business space. And you're doing exactly that, but with the business leaders of tomorrow. And we'll get into that shortly. But please tell us a bit about your professional journey and how you developed a passion for financial literacy in Africa.
Well, Sibs, first of all, we love the mission of the Ziwani platform. I think it's an incredible idea. So thank you very much for the platform and also for the privilege of being on the platform. I think that the first thing that we need to be really clear about is that we are living in a disposable planet, as John MacArthur put it in a tremendous sermon a couple of months ago. In fact, in that sermon, he compared the present world to, he said, a styrofoam cup, which I thought was quite funny. You know, those disposable cups. Yeah. But I thought it was a very vivid picture, right? But he said the present world is like a styrofoam cup when you think about it relative to God's plan and to eternity. This planet actually has a very brief usage. And the reason that I wanted to start about this, and I did give it some thought, is because when as Christians you engage in, let's say, secular activities or something to do with economics or money, or even try to get involved in something that's solving a problem related to the human condition or even the state of the planet. And these are very good things for Christians to be involved in. Yes. In fact, currently at Standard Bank, one of my new responsibilities this year is to get involved in the discussion around climate. And that's just to ensure that it's the voice of Standard Bank as an organization, but also of customers, which are really ordinary people and big businesses, et cetera. But then those are heard in the debate. So Christians need to be involved in this area. We can't, just look internally and say, no, this is worldly, right?
100%, I agree.
But you need to ground yourself as you get involved and you do this sort of work. You do need to ground yourself in this absolute truth about the temporary nature of this world, right? And that is an absolute truth because it's so easy to lose sight of it when you're trying to solve big world problems. So I think it's just important that to remember that the world is a temporary arrangement. I'm anchoring our discussion in this. And that sort of underlays everything that I'm going to talk about. But the world is a temporary arrangement. It's going to be replaced by a new and infinitely better and richer heaven and earth. In fact, there's simply no comparison, right?
I would use the word restored rather than replaced, but I think we're on the same page. Go ahead.
Yeah. So our passion, but I know you, Sips, I'm going to be very careful. I know you choose your words very carefully. I've learned that in the course of our friendship. So let's see where this I never just take anything for face, at face value when I discuss with you. But that's part of why I enjoy. And I've really benefited so richly from our friendship and our engagement. So anyway, our passion for financial empowerment. And actually,
Before you go there, Audrey, I love you. You're obviously so humble. You don't like talking about yourself.
No, but I am going to talk about myself.
but I'd really love for our audience to know a little bit of your background. Who are you, and professionally, sort of where you're at, and so on. So the kind of journey that brought you to where you are.
Okay, so my own journey, it's an almost 20-year journey in the financial services sector. And I'm not sure if you will post my bio on your website,
we will.
but but the listeners can read the full bio. But it's an almost 20-year journey in the financial services sectors. And in recent years, I've had the privilege of having roles which enabled me to work across various African countries. I've also been privileged to have had access and engagements at various levels in the continent. And in fact, I was very lucky that part of the friendships that I formed ultimately led me to people who became supporters of the campaign. But ultimately, and my background is law, so LLB, LLM, currently trying to get involved with the PhD world, but that's a bit of a struggle. It's it's been quite a full year so far, but that's really what you know what my background is professionally and academically. Yes.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that actually the journey. I'm glad that you've asked about the journey because as I think about it, it's the journey has been important because through the journey, it became increasingly clear to me that there was a terrible problem actually around money. And maybe that's a very strong word, but it's true actually. It's actually a mild word. And especially, I'm afraid to say, among professing Christians, myself at the front actually of that queue. And it became clear to me that the belief system around money is actually where the most intense spiritual battle is. And I'm not just talking about the fact that we just don't manage money well. Yeah. In fact, myself and many of the colleagues that I've worked with over the years, as I said, almost 20 years in financial services, including banking, just don't manage money well. We're like the rest of the population, getting caught up in the consumptive culture. And that's an important part when you talk about campaign fee and what you're trying to achieve. But we also... I also got caught up in the consumption culture, living from paycheck to paycheck, finding ourselves perennially indebted. In fact, it's quite interesting when I think about it, because I think most adults that have been, let's say, in the workplace or in business for, a couple of decades, I think it's very difficult if you ask someone, can you remember a time when there wasn't a debit order coming off your bank account or something?
Is that even a thing? Not having a debit order?
Is that a thing? And most of us have normalized living in such a permanent state of indebtedness. But I suppose, I live in South Africa, and I know that, the credit culture is probably more intense here just because of the easy availability of credit. But even if it's not formalized in other African countries, the idea of living permanently in a state of indebtedness, and it's going to be really important. I mean, the Bible says the borrower is slave to the lender, right? So there's something spiritual about accepting that you're going to be permanently in this status throughout your economically active life, which also obviously overlays with your let's call it evangelically active life, right?
Right.
So that's the period of your life that you're most likely and to be more most effective, both from an economic perspective, but also from an evangelical perspective. And we're all called, obviously, to share the gospel. But just think about it. During that period, you're also indebted all the time.
While I think about it, I'm going to be brave and try to jump in here. Steer the conversation towards campaign fear. And I'm glad you used the word problem earlier, because when we're talking about redemption, the whole premise is that something's gone wrong, right? There's a problem that needs to be fixed. And when we're thinking about engaging redemptively as Christians, we're thinking about how does the gospel and indeed the biblical narrative change or bring change to the situation. So can I direct the conversation now towards campaign fear? So what is that, and what problem are you looking to solve, and how are you trying to go about it?
Okay, so here's an overview of the problem. and where our passion for financial empowerment. And in fact, we are actually, we don't even call it financial literacy. We started off calling it a financial literacy program organization. We then moved in the last year to financial empowerment. And I think ultimately we're going to land on financial resilience. Here's the problem. So we're coming from the belief that once a person has the right belief system about money, which is a biblical worldview, then they're going to be liberated from a destructive worldview, which causes enslavement. And we've already spoken about that just now. So what our organization believes is that if we can teach children at a young age the truth about money, then they will gain the resilience that they need to be effective evangelists during that economically active period of their lives, and to also live a life that's, I suppose, full of the freedom that Christ promised us. Because I think maybe, you know, people that have sort of my age, we've kind of been, we were, you know, born sort of in peaceful times, etc. And maybe we've kind of lost the sense of how important freedom is. But
right,
you know, Galatians 5 verse 1 says, it's for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourself be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. So that's the goal, you know, to use of a full and, let's say, profitable life, to use business terminology. And if these children can grow up to be truly free in Christ, then they're going to be more effective evangelists and be more effectively positioned to fulfill God's purpose for their lives, you know, in whatever time they have in this temporary level. So that's what the campaign FEAR is trying to that's the challenge that we're trying to achieve. And we think, which is why we moved away pretty quickly from trying to create a financial literacy program, because no amount of financial literacy education is going to change the spiritual problem at any fundamental level. So, I mean, it's all good and well to save, and it's good to be in the habit of saving, say, you know, a percentage of your income consistently. That's biblical, it's endorsed in the Bible, but fundamentally what we think is a problem is not technical, it's spiritual, and it's a worldview.
So this is fascinating, Audrey, because when we last spoke, it really was about, I think you were still in the sort of financial literacy mode. So now that you're talking about financial resilience and saying actually the problem is spiritual, so what does that actually mean practically in terms of what you are doing with the younger generation? And by the way, I think from a redemptive point of view, I think dealing with the younger generation is incredibly powerful. But that's just as an aside. But what does that actually mean? Because if you're going beyond financial literacy programs, what are you actually doing?
Okay, so our core service or program is a financial empowerment class for grade ones, so ages 5 to 10 years, around 10 years of age. And it's usually a single event that we host. At this stage, our goal, and I know we're going to talk about goals later, but our goal is to plant campaign FEAR, I suppose, in every African country, in all 55 countries. But at this stage, we usually do an event in a country with a small group of children. We target a number of 10 because this allows us to focus on each child. And, you know, it's in addition to teaching, it also gives the children a chance to have a voice and to speak freely, etc. But there's three components to it. The first component is getting feedback from the children, understanding what kind of attitudes to money they've been exposed to even at that young age, and you will be surprised. You will be surprised at what comes out. It's really, it's very, very interesting. I think at some stage when we've done the 55 countries, we need to go back to this data and do a deep dive to try and analyze it. I mean, I can give you an example. One thing that's consistent in all the, I think, five countries that we've been in to date. But one thing that's been consistent is that when we start that session, we're just trying to, you know, get a sense of what the children's attitudes are on money is. consistent in each class, the kids say poor people are evil and rich people are good.
Wow.
So, you know, make of that what you will. But, you know, it's a very rich questionnaire that we've developed. Obviously, we've developed it coming from a biblical worldview, coming from a problem that I think we've diagnosed, sort of what's at the center of the problem. But all the stuff that's around that, that's what we're trying to get to. So it's almost like a three-assessment. So that's the first assessment, first pillar. The second pillar is then just to teach, to talk about what is the purpose of money? What's the role of money? And now these are 5 to 10-year-olds, and we often have quite a big age diversity, you know, in the classes. So it's not at any big technical level, but what we do try and impart is the purpose of money. We try to impart the principle around stewardship. We try to impart the principle around, you know, actually money belongs to God. What did he say? The gold and the silver are mine, right?
Yes.
So you're given a certain amount or access to a certain amount, but that doesn't mean that it's been given to you to, you know, spend on everything your heart desires, but it's actually a tool, right? And when you start thinking about this, it's very liberating, actually. So we teach them that. We teach them, obviously, saving. That's very practical. As I said, that's in the Bible. We also teach them giving. Very, very, very important. And actually, I think one area where the church doesn't get enough credit, the church has been very strong in charitable giving. A few years ago, and I don't know if these stats are still correct, I remember reading that most of charitable giving in the United States actually came from religious people that identified as religious. And I don't think that the church gets enough credit for that. But anyway, so we teach them giving and why that's important spiritually. And we also teach them about having a more long-term focus. And I think those lessons are important for Africa.
Right. Just pause there. So, because I guess my question, because you'd said that, you know, you've moved away from financial literacy. So I was just listening as you go along to sort of try and work out how is this different from just a financial literacy program. And so what I'm hearing so far is that you are actually confronting worldviews and introducing the children, as it were, or reinforcing a distinctly biblical Christian worldview. So it's not just about dollars and cents. It's actually how you think, how you see the world, how you see money, and indeed how you see God and yourself in that context. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Our motto is disrupting poverty, but as I explained, we see poverty as being more than just material conditions. It's a poverty of spirit, and it is caused directly by a warped worldview about money. You know, one of the things that we, you know, sort of infuse into the discussion that we have, and it's not a formal like classroom type setup. There's a lot of play and fun involved. In fact, I was going to say the third element of our classes, by the way, is play. So we then host a little snacks or lunch, and then we have money games. I remember the class in Uganda. What they did as part of their games is they set up a mock shop and they made little paper money and their children going to, you know, but just it's fun. Yeah. So there is an element of fun, but one of the things that we infuse is really around confronting that worldview. And Matthew 6 verse 24, which says, no one can serve two masters, since either he will hate one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. That's central to, you know, the belief system or what we try to impart in the engagements with the children.
Right. And can I just ask you to rattle off the countries that you've actually had piloted?
Yes, so we started off in Johannesburg because that's where we're based. And, you know, charity begins at home. So Johannesburg, Uganda, Côte d'Ivoire, which was excellent, was our first Francophone one. And then we had a class in Zambia. And I don't know if we'll get to it. I think we're running out of time. But our first patron, we're very honored to have as our first, our founding patron, the former Zambian president, President Kaunda. And I think that was really very God ordained, because interestingly, as I sort of dug a bit deeper into President Kaunda's past, it became very clear that he's one of a few leaders who openly talks about God. And in fact, I think, and I'm willing to be fact checked because I haven't really checked it out myself, but I was told that Zambia is the only country that has that explicitly identifies itself as a Christian nation in its founding documents. I found that very interesting. And of course, that framing happened under President Kaunda, right? So I don't know if it was a coincidence, because we weren't actually explicitly looking for someone with that background, but we just knew someone who connected us with the former president, the late former president, and he was very keen to get involved. But anyway, so we did a session in Zambia, luckily just about a month or two before President Kaunda passed away. We have done one in Ghana, and is that five? Yes, so we've done five, and we are currently putting together our next session, which will be in the DRC, and that will be our second Francophone one, which is nice, because every time we go into we do these classes, it's not just about delivering the program. We're actually learning, we're adjusting, and we're refining.
Right, and Audrey, what's the end game? Okay, you're having these pilots, you're having these sessions. That's great. You mentioned you want to get into all 55 member countries of the AU. Is that correct? What's the end game? What is success for you?
So what success looks like for us, and I think this is evolving, but so what we've done instead is that we've said that what are ultimately, if you call it key impact areas.
Yes.
And we've identified three core areas of impact. And what that specifically looks like, I think, is going to get clearer. But there are three core areas of impact that we've identified making a difference in, as we sort of create or encourage this biblical worldview of money among children. So the first one is, and I mean, they sound quite lofty, but broken down, I suppose they will make sense at an individual level. But the first one is disrupting poverty at an individual level. So we know that once you sort of address the spiritual element around that, and we're not just talking about material poverty, we know that disrupting poverty at the level of the individual, which is why we have very small classes, it's the most powerful lever for change. So we go in, we engage 10 children, we change their mindsets. This actually translates into disrupting the thinking materially and spiritually at a household level, at a community level, and ultimately at the level of the nation. So it's a bottom-up approach. So that's one, right? Yep. So disrupt material and spiritual poverty. Good. Two, I think something which is... it is more practical, but it's also quite spiritual. We think Africa needs more job creators. We need job seekers. Okay. Right. And we think that in part, part of the reason why there is, I suppose, from a material level, why there's so much poverty, et cetera, in Africa, I think is a function to some extent of the worldview. So think about this. Let me give you a practical illustration, which might be easier than trying to articulate it.
Okay.
So most of us grew up being told, get good grades, go to university, find someone to give you a job, and get paid a decent salary, right?
Yeah.
Now, that's not a terrible message on its own. But when you scale that messaging and it becomes the norm, then it's a very terrible message, because its end point is that we're going to end up, and we have ended up, with entire nations of consumers. I was watching a documentary on, I don't know if it was Al Jazeera, actually just yesterday, and I just thought of it, about Chinese influence in Zambia. And what was very interesting for me is what came through, there's a consumption mindset and a producer or builder mindset. Mm. And I think one of the consequences of this sort of the way that we, that we've been messaged to, is that we have a consumptive message, and it makes us as a people and as a continent very vulnerable. So what we're saying is, I think currently we're educating kids, right, to think, how do I find someone to give me something? So wages, a salary. That thinking is consumptive at its core, right?
Right, right. right?
Okay. So that thinking is consumptive at its core. And I think a better way, and then you think, how do I trade my time? And increasingly, that also means trading my bodily integrity, my beliefs and my ethics, my sense of who I am for this, in exchange for this.
Yeah.
So we think that, and to, you know, sort of bring this part to a close, we think that a better and more important message for African children, and especially given that there'll be less jobs in the future as digitization progresses, is to think of yourself and your mission as a producer, a builder, and a creator. So we want, so that's part of what we do. We, I mean, you know, obviously we started off quite in the sort of traditional sort of way, but now we're actually explicitly trying to influence the children to be, you know, to go and create for themselves. So we want that 5 or 6 year old child sitting in our class to have the seeds planted that says, my goal is to create, to produce, and to build. And in my view, final point on this, is that producers and creators also make better evangelists, because evangelism, which is at the core of our function as believers, flows from a builder mentality. And actually, it's quite warped when it comes from a consumption mentality. The result is things like distortions, such as the prosperity gospel, or false teachers that just want to use the church to enrich themselves, or worldly churches that value those sort of things. And then you've got lukewarm congregations that never take on the mission that Christ left to us.
Wow, amazing. So tell me, in terms of rollout on the ground, what's the dream there? What do you want to see? Because you're doing these pilots, but are you trying to get them into churches, into schools? What is the rollout plan or the rollout dream?
So we have both a churches program and a schools program. On the schools program part, is because if you look at the behaviors that I told you about that we are current, that currently form the core of our teaching, those are also quite very wise messages from a secular perspective. So from a school's perspective, we are actually lobbying and advocating for the introduction of financial literacy education in schools. And we're also developing our own church program. So if you look at the five, and so we're rolling this out, you know, almost, it's a sort of a mixed method. And if you look at the five classes that we've had, some of those have been in schools. Some of those have been with the churches and a Sunday school. And one of them was just with an organization that, you know, looked after special needs kids and orphans. So we're it's a mixed method.
Right, right. And how have you funded these pilots? Sounds like quite a lot's happened on the ground. Who's backing you on this?
Okay, so currently we are actually funding this ourselves. So our directors are funding it. We so the current funding model is that the directors fund the intervention. So to date, between Wesley Tendao Penyu, one of the directors, and myself, we have funded the sessions that have been held in the 5 and, as I said, soon to be 6 countries. We obviously welcome funding from other brothers and sisters who have the resources to do so. But at the moment, we're just moving forward with what we have and funding it ourselves.
Fantastic. And maybe that's a good place to close, because there might be people listening to this thinking, hey, I really love what you're doing, or and would certainly love to hear more and possibly engage with what you're doing. Is there a way for people to get involved, and how would they get in touch with you?
Yes, definitely. But as I briefly mentioned, and I think I know we don't have much time, but I would be remiss not to say it. I do want to publicly thank you. I mean, you've been very modest, but you've been an important part of the journey. I think, Sibs, if you remember, I approached you, I think, at some point in 2019, when I just had the idea. We hadn't started. And actually, there was nothing there except for an idea. I didn't have a board of directors. There was really nothing there. And I knew roughly what the problem that I was seeing was, but we had several sessions. I mean, you gave me so much of your time where we articulated it from a, you know, you taught me the whole, you know, the way of framing it from a redemptive perspective, etc. So very grateful for the many hours of counseling and I suppose endurance of my weirdness and idiosyncrasies, la la la. But
from a business point of view, we have kept a certain coffee shop in business.
No, we absolutely have. And also two directors that I've spoken about, you actually introduced me to both the two directors that we currently have, Ken Langley and Wesley Tendao Penyu. So thank you very much. So how can people get involved? I would say that financial support, if someone wants to support a class in a specific country, we've got good networks, as I sort of alluded to at the beginning. I think that's been as a consequence of the work that I've been, that I've had and the experiences that I've had in my, with my other hat. So people can support a class if they want. We'll have one in the DRC in the coming month, but that's the funding for that is sorted. But we do want to do at least two other sessions this year. So people are welcome to get in touch with us if they want to get involved and fund us. Our website is www.campaignfear.org, www.campaignfear.org, or you can email me on info@campaignfear.org.
Fantastic. And we'll have all of those details for our listeners to pick up on. So thank you so much for that. And just, are you at liberty to share how much one of these pilots cost?
It really varies quite wildly. The first one that we did in Johannesburg was actually very reasonable. I can't remember the figure, but it was under 20,000 to host the class itself. I mean, there are other elements where we try to raise money for kids for other things, and that's obviously additional. But it was actually very reasonable. But we recently held a session on the 1st of January this year in Ghana, and that was quite expensive, almost double the Johannesburg cost base. So it really depends. I mean, currently still, I know obviously South Africa has a bit of problems at the moment, but currently I think it just depends on the cost base of the country that we operate in, because we have to pay facilitators usually. We have to pay a photographer. We have to get all the materials ready. Sometimes we pay for a venue, sometimes we don't. So there's a cost, and it really depends on the cost base of the country. But with every class that we've held, and all our donors and funders are always open, welcome to this information. We have receipts wherever we can. Some countries, I know when we did Cote d'Ivoire, for example, the lady that we're working with said, no, most people don't normally buy food at the supermarkets here. They normally buy in the markets. That's the culture, you know. So, you know, I mean, it's not always going to be possible, but we do receipt everything, and we account for every single penny.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. Audrey, thank you so much for your time. And I really do look forward to having you back on this platform and tracking your progress with this. I'm so encouraged, and I hope our listeners are, by your passion, faith, and tenacity. You've been at this. It's outlived the COVID pandemic, and it's still on track. So well done to you, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Sibs. Thanks for the platform, and have a blessed weekend.
Thank you. Same to you.